All financial advice provided on this show is for entertainment and educational purposes only. The financial ideas and strategies discussed are only provided as a starting point for a conversation about money matters. With regard to your particular investments and financial strategies, consult your financial planner, CPA, or investment professional. All your financial decisions are yours and yours alone to make and subsequently are solely your responsibility. The information that is supplied through the context of the radio program and any repurposing of its content by the host or network is a combination and collection of solid financial investment understanding, opinion, and comments. This network, show, and its host are not liable for financial strategies, outcomes that you employ in any manner that result in any kind of loss. Shares of corporate sponsors may be the subject of buy or sell recommendations in Jay Taylor's newsletter in accordance with Jay's objective opinion.
Welcome to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. This hour will help investors fix issues and achieve personal gain. Now, here's your host, Jay Taylor.
Welcome to Turning Hard Times into Good Times. I am your host, Jay Taylor, and I'm speaking to you as I usually do from New York City. This is June 18th, 2019. I want to thank each of you for listening to the show, making it one of the more popular shows on the Voice America Business Channel. I also want to invite you to keep your questions and comments coming along. The questions for Taylor at gmail.com. Questions the number for Taylor at gmail.com. We do need to thank our sponsors for this show. Otherwise, we would not be having this show, would not be talking to you now. Klondike Gold, Novo Resources, RN Resources, and Strike Point Gold are our current sponsors for Turning Hard Times into Good Times. Today's guests, Ronald Peter Stoffel, Quentin Henning, and Michael Oliver, all return. Peter and his colleague, Mark Valick, have published their 2019 annual In Gold We Trust report. It suggests that a world awash in debt is sitting on the edge of a disastrous financial abyss. As such, there are growing cries, at least from some people, for a return to an honest and an honest monetary system and an exit from the fiat counterfeit system that is responsible for a world heading towards another financial disaster. We'll ask Peter to explain the market and social dynamics that are driving this growing urge to return to honest money in the form of gold. As well, we want to know how the bankers and governments that profit from gold market manipulation through futures market trading are likely to respond. What are the market factors that may force a return to honest money despite objections of the status quo? And I'm really looking forward to speaking with Peter. So many things to talk to him about. It is a book that I think it's a free of charge book that you can order and download on the internet. We'll ask Peter how you might do that. But it's just there's way too much to talk about today. I think we're going to have Peter back to address many of the topics that are in that 300-some page book. Dr. Quentin Henning will be with me after, after the first commercial break to update us on the progress of Novo Resources that they're making in Western Australia. Most importantly, I want to ask Quentin about the significance of the recently announced $30 million agreement with Sumitomo to be applied towards moving the Egina project towards production. Novo shares are way below their 2017 highs of around $8. That was in response to the initial discovery, the novelty of which has worn off. But the notion that the Pilbara Basin hosts another Witwaters Rand-like gold deposit is still very much in play as the company now digs into the establish the economics and the prospects for that gigantic conglomerate gold system that stretches for hundreds of kilometers. So really looking forward to hearing from Quentin and the latest, especially with regard to the agreement with Sumitomo, that world-class gold mining company that is now going to be working with Novo Resources. But right now, I'm really happy to tell you once again, we are so privileged to have Michael Oliver with us once again. And I would just urge you to jot down the website. It's olivermsa.com, olivermsa.com. Go there, learn more about Michael's service. And I think he probably has some free goodies there as well. But go there and take advantage of what Michael has to offer. You know, you're lucky to be able to listen to Michael's thoughts here free of charge. But if you really want to take advantage of what Michael has to offer, well, you know, you usually get what you pay for. And here in this case, you get a little bit more than you pay for. Thanks for joining me again, Michael.
Hi, Jay. Good to be back.
Always good to have you. Michael, I want to start out today by passing along a question from a listener. A couple of days ago, a listener to this show sent the following message, and I quote, "I listened today to your latest interview with Michael Oliver, as I do every week. Some months ago, Michael suggested that after the downturn in gold, that it was going to be a major struggle to get back into the 1330 area. For some time, it went down to a 1280 range, and I thought Michael had made a mistake and seemed unwilling to own up to it. However, in thinking it over, maybe Michael was quite right, that it was going to be a struggle to get back over 1330, but be that as it may, it has returned, and an apology is now in order. We are now at 1335. As I said, this was written a few days ago. We're higher than that now. We are now at 1335, thereabouts, and again, struggling to rise up from there. I don't recall what he said or might have said to get from 1330 to 1360, but he did say in January that if we got through the 1360 area, it was going to rapidly move towards 1500. Can you ask Michael if he still feels that way the next time you meet with him? So we're meeting with Michael now. What are your thoughts, Michael? Do you still see a $1,500 gold possibility if we get through that 1360 level?
Oh, yeah. It's a price chart level. All the momentum work that we do, long-term momentum, annual, quarterly, and so forth, has broken out. It's positive. It's already long been positive starting in February 2016 when gold went through 1140. And then when we came up off the August lows of last year, which were down at 1161, we issued three separate buy signals, one at 1200, 1240, and 1280 on the way up. And the only thing left now is literally the technical breakout of the price charts. And this anybody can see if you get a weekly or a monthly price chart, go back to about 2014, and you will see all these rally highs that crested somewhere in the mid-1300s. It's almost a flat line. Mm-hmm. So it's a bleeding obvious structure, okay? Every asset manager in the world who's not in this market is looking at that line and realizes if it gets crossed, he's going to have to make a decision, be there or be out of it, one or the other. Mm-hmm. And so it's a very interesting price chart structure, and it's a valid one. It's not, a lot of price chart breakouts or fakeouts. This one we view as a valid pending structure and one that should gush on the upside. We ran up quickly to it from our May low. Back in May, we were still grinding in the 1280s, 1290s. On the last day of the month, we had a number that we didn't think would be engaged until June, but it did it in the last hours of May and broke its monthly momentum out to the upside and gushed to the upside. We went from below 1300 to 1340, 50 in a matter of about 5 or 6 trading days. Mm-hmm. In fact, that was the most rapid ascent in gold in several years over such a short span of time. Mm-hmm. But once we got up there, we were overbought, especially if you reference short-term type indicators, including our momentum indicators, very short-term. So you were too hot to keep going, so it's best to pause. We did. Now, there was a day last week, I think it was last Friday, where we were up and we closed about $20 off the high. And I think somebody at that point said, oh, it's another dumping by some manipulator.
Yeah.
That's another popular issue out there among gold bugs, is that somebody's manipulating the market by dumping gold, especially in the night session, electronic session, massive quantities of contracts in order to control the market. And anybody who's been around these markets long enough knows that while that might be true, ultimately it doesn't halt reality. You might try to delay it. But ultimately, if you play that game, you're probably going to lose. And if you just pause and think about it for a minute, over the last several months of retrenchment, which was really the most modest gold retrenchment we've had of any of the highs that reached up into the mid-1300s of the last few years, this one was the most timid from February through May of this year. But there were a couple instances there where during the night session there was a dumping, apparently, of contracts. Or at least it felt to look like that. And it looked like somebody trying to manipulate it. Mm-hmm. But if you sit and think about it, if somebody sells gold futures, even if they sell them in a million ounces at once, okay, they either have to, one, be selling existing long contracts, or was taking profits on a prior long position, okay, which meant they bought it before they sold it, or they're initiating a short position. Mm-hmm. Now, if they initiate a short position, anybody who dumped into the gold market over the last 3 or 4 months of the retrenchment process, and did it in one of those dramatic, you know, intranight things. Mm-hmm. They're losers big time, unless they covered those short positions at some point. Mm-hmm. Because ultimately, if they shorted at all those given levels, which are well below us now, they're dead and buried. Because mm-hmm. we're 1340, 1350, and a lot of those sales occurred in the high 1200s. Mm-hmm. So I feel sorry for those folks. And so if you're a conspiracy-oriented thinker, think again. Because if they did it and they didn't work, and ultimately it did not work, obviously, then those guys are hurting pretty bad. Or they were exiting a long position and have missed out on the upside. So either way, the guys who dumped the gold got hurt. Now, mm-hmm. it takes me back to the late 70s. During the bull market from the 1976 low in gold to 1980, during especially 1978 and 9, the IMF was dumping gold in mass. In fact, they sold over 50 million ounces. Not a million ounces, 50 million 50. Ounces in repeated auctions that were scheduled, some unscheduled. And anyway, those initially had a negative impact on the gold market when they occurred. You would see the market would sell off. But after mm-hmm. a while, those auctions, those dumpings of gold, had a zero impact. In fact, the gold market ate it up and just went right through their
I sale. Remember that.
Okay, and we're talking quantity there, 50 million ounces, not a million. And it wasn't just future, it was real gold. Okay?
It was real gold, right.
Real gold. Well, it doesn't matter. It's, you know, it was real sales. They weren't conjuring it up. And yet the gold market ate it up and went from, you know, $103.50 at the August low of 1976 to $850 in 1980. So reality will prevail. And I feel sorry for anybody who might have dumped gold over the last 3 or 4 months of correction because they lost no matter which way they did it. So gold long should smile.
Yeah, my guess is that some of the major bankers probably were in there covering at the right time or close to it. But be that as it may, at longer term, you're right. If you held that position, you'd lose your fanny, wouldn't you?
Yeah. It wasn't very strategic. Anyway, so I'm very comfortable with gold. I think what we need to do now is maybe congest between now and the end of the quarter. Part of that conclusion we've come up with, and I could be wrong on that issue, we might go ahead and ramp ahead. The T-bonds look like they want to ramp ahead, and gold is in sort of the same category as bonds. It's an alternative investment. But the thing we're looking at is the dollar index, and the dollar index is poised, in our view, for a sharp downside. It's been dull for 10 to 11 months now, basically either side of 97 on the dollar index. We think that's about to end, and therefore that the foreign exchange markets, dollar and the euro inverse, are about to become noisy players in world asset categories. Yeah. And that would no doubt help gold, although we have to admit a firm or steady dollar since August of last year has not been an adverse impact on gold at all.
That's right. Gold has done very well. Michael, in about 30 seconds, what do you make of this, the relationship between the T-bond and or the treasuries in general and the equity markets? I mean, normally we would expect yields to rise as equity prices rise, but in fact yields are collapsing. Which market has it right?
I think the T-bonds have it right for the moment, meaning we turned bullish on T-bonds in December last year at 141, mm-hmm. and they're trading up in the 150s now, and we think they'll go to 160 probably at least. Mm-hmm. We're talking T-bond futures. It is an asset class shift. It sometimes T-bonds will rally sharply if there's a very sharp collapse in the stock market. That happened in late 2018, and recently in the May drop, the T-bonds took off again when the S&P dropped in May. But despite the S&P rally, the T-bonds won't give it up, and what that indicates to us is the flight to yield, even modest yield that you can get out of a 10-year or 30-year government bond, is solid. It's not impressed by a stock rally. There was people who are buying bonds and moving out of stocks aren't saying, oh, I better get back in stocks. No, they're persistent, and the T-bond action indicates that. Mm-hmm. And I think if the stock market rolls over again from whatever point, and by the way, you know, the S&P right now, for those who are cheering and beating their chest about how great it is, it's all of about 1% higher than it was a year and a half ago.
Wow.
Go back and look at January 2018. Mm-hmm. We're 28.82, okay? Mm-hmm. We were there yesterday.
Going nowhere fast. Going nowhere fast.
In other words, it's going nowhere fast, and that in itself says something, you know.
All right. We'll have to leave it go at that, Michael. Thank you so much for your insights. Very valuable. Very helpful. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Jay.
All right, folks, we got to go to break, but don't go away. Dr. Quentin Henning of Novo Resources will be with us to give us an update on what's going on with that company. Especially, I want to ask him about the recent announcement with Sumitomo, in which Sumitomo is agreeing step-by-step to go along to help put the Agena project into production. They're committing upwards to $30 million to make that happen. So don't go away. We'll be right back with Dr. Quentin Henning.
Novo Resources Corp. trades on the OTCQX under the symbol NSRPF and on the TSX Venture Exchange under NVO. Its flagship assets are located in the Karratha region of Western Australia, where they are currently drilling and trenching their Perdes Reward Project. In addition, Novo has partnered with Sumitomo Mining Corporation to advance its Beaton's Creek Gold Project toward production. With over $70 million in cash and strong shareholder support from the likes of Kirkland Lake Gold, Novo is well on its way to establishing itself as one of the top junior explorers and developers in Australia.
StrikePoint Gold, trading under SKP on the TSX and STKXF on the OTC, has a market cap of under $10 million. StrikePoint is a new player in the Golden Triangle of BC and Canada. Focus will be on drilling the Willoughby project in 2019. Prior drilling delivered over 20 meters of 25 grams per ton gold and 184 grams per ton silver. Recent receding glaciers have identified new gold targets. Neighboring projects have been acquired by StrikePoint's largest shareholder, Ascot. Eric Sprott and Skeena round out the other top shareholders.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. If you have a question or comment about today's show, Jay would love to hear from you at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also send an email to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. That's questions, the number 4, taylor@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to Turning Hard Times into Good Times. I am your host, Jay Taylor, and I'm really pleased to have Dr. Quentin Henning with me once again. Quentin is the Executive Chairman of Novo Resources. Thanks for coming back with us today, Quentin. Thanks for joining us.
Always a pleasure, Jay.
You know, you have some pretty exciting news, I think, although the market hasn't responded very much to it. But I think I'd like to get a better understanding of what's going on with your agreement with Sumitomo Corp. and that as it applies specifically, I understand, to the Agena project. Can you provide key details regarding Novo's agreement with Sumitomo and also explain why you think the market may not be paying sufficient attention to this news release?
You know, I would say initially there was a lot of, maybe confusion, if not just getting caught off guard, I guess is the best way to put it, amongst investors. I've done a few interviews and talked to various people to explain this agreement, give them a bit of the history. You know, we've developed a relation with Sumitomo now for about 3 or 4 years. We actually signed an MOU with them regarding Beaton's Creek back in 2017.
Mm-hmm.
Sumitomo is a very interesting company. It's really basically a finance group. They have interests in many different industries, many, many different industries, not just mining. Mm-hmm. This is not Sumitomo Metal Mining. This is actually the sister company, which is bigger.
Okay.
Now, most companies, mining companies that Sumitomo Corporation deals with are big companies, you know, Newmont, Teck, you know, companies like that. So for them to team up with Novo, basically a junior mining company, is exceptional. That first thing point I would make. Okay. The second point I would make is that the guys at Sumitomo are long-term committed. They like to make projects work. They are always aligned with the company. They have good technical people who help. They like to put their money to work to make a mine successful. All right, so here comes Agena. We have a very interesting project, lots of potential, but it's got challenges. It's going to require some, you know, unconventional means, like a lot of the things that Novo works on, to advance it. We are doing bulk sampling and so forth. But if you look at the big picture, we as Noble stepped back a few months ago, asked ourselves, what is the best way, you know, that will give us the best chance of success to make this project work? We didn't want to, say, cowboy it, okay? Go out and try to build a small mine, you know, slap things together. This is not the kind of environment you want to do that. You want to have a big vision here. And Sumitomo's vision fits ours. We want to see a large-scale commercial operation out of it, provided the data that we gather along the way. All right, so we're basically doing working on a project that requires near-term exploration, like, you know, this is just basic boots-on-the-ground exploration work, as well as elements of engineering, native title discussions. We have environmental permitting that needs to be done. You know, these are big lifting items. These are things that usually take a lot of time and money. But we decided by teaming up with Sumitomo that we could work together, basically use funds from Sumitomo, while Novo remains majority owner of the project, and we can work together to advance it to commercial production. I mean, this is an exceptional opportunity. You think about it. This was nothing more than a twinkle in God's eyes a few months ago for us. And we've taken a project that we acquired for, you know, a few million dollars, and we've now created something on the order of 110 million Australian million Australian dollars in value through this venture. I mean, that's exceptional. So, as far as you know, my overall view on this, love working with the folks from Sumitomo. I think we will work very well together. I see us fully aligned to make this into a successful endeavor. We will overcome the various risks. You know, we'll overcome the issues around putting a resource together on this. We'll negotiate native title. You know, we'll try to figure out a processing scheme in a dry environment. Now, these are not small tasks, but we will do it together, and I would say our chances of success are extremely high at this point.
With Sumitomo being able to help bankroll that, and that makes a lot of sense. Well, you know, you've got three projects there. Essentially, you have Beaton's Creek and Comet Well, which was, of course, what gained you so much attention two years ago. What is it about Egina that is causing you and Sumitomo to focus first on that project?
Well, there's a few aspects. Firstly, it is free dig. So this is a gravel horizon that sits right at the surface. Those who followed this last year, we did our first bulk sample there in November and December. We got some initial results that proved encouraging. It is a project that can be advanced fairly quickly. It's a granted mining lease. That's a big help. All right. You know, but those heavy lifting items I mentioned are also at play here. So it's like I said, a hybrid between an exploration program and an engineering program, really. But see a path where we can move this forward fairly quickly. The agreement we have with Sumitomo is staged. Each stage has certain benchmarks that we hope to achieve, you know, as far as seeing the grade there, seeing the continuity, and then the subsequent stages have to do around ability to process it and define a resource, things like that. But ultimately, this strategy that we have holding hands with Sumitomo will get us to the finish line.
Mm-hmm. So, can you talk about those stages along the way? I mean, are you going to try to build a resource? Because I know this is an unusual kind of a deposit. Are you going to try to build a resource? That was one question I have for you also. Do you think you'll be able to use a sorting technology that you've confirmed probably would work at Comet Well? But would it be appropriate also at Egina?
Those are both very good questions. Firstly, the resource, yes. You know, Egina is basically a large, vast alluvial system. I think that if we use conventional alluvial approach, we can come up with a resource for the deposit. It's going to take quite a bit of sampling and over an extensive area to do that, but I think we can make it work. as far as processing technologies, you know, this area is dry. You know, if we wanted to go out with a large trommel right now, we couldn't do it. There's not enough water. You mm-hmm. can drill water bores for the rest of your life and you never find enough water. We need solutions that allow us to process material in a dry environment. And ore sorting is certainly one that we're looking at. Initially, we thought maybe this isn't the best way to go. But lately, we've been talking with Tomra, who's very keen on our projects because of the ability to pick coarse gold. So Tomra is right in line with us. I will be talking about this at the conference later this week. We do see opportunity to use ore sorting as a means out here. There's other things we're looking at, too. I would say there's at least three, we'll call it dry techniques, that we're going to look at. Sorting, we'll look at rotary air concentrators. This would be like dry blowing is what they call it. And then thirdly, we're going to look at dense media separation, which is a low water or no water means of processing material like this.
Mm-hmm. So the idea is to be able to come up with some sort of a concentrate and then mill it, right?
That's correct. Yeah, basically the concentrate would be gold. So we see the concentrate being a high value product.
Right. Okay. So what about some of your other projects? What about Beaton's Creek, for example? What do you have planned for that project? I know you've got a resource there, nearly 1 million ounces, relatively high grade for near surface, the oxides anyway.
Yes. Okay, so we have our option study underway that's near completion. I expect a report on that sometime next week. Once we finalize that, we'll present it to the market. We also see a path forward because Sumitomo has allocated 5 billion yen, which corresponds to roughly 65 million Australian dollars, to help us advance that project.
Oh, okay. That's in addition to the 30 million they're talking about for Regina.
It is, Jay. That's what I can't emphasize enough, how valuable this partnership is.
Mm-hmm.
Novo can go from being an exploration company working on what was at one time very conceptual geological theory, and now we're moving this thing towards production. I mean, how awesome is that? It's just mm-hmm. fantastic.
Okay, what about
Comet Well? Look, I won't leave that hanging. So Comet Well, we have we're strategizing on the bulk sampling process. We talked about this about a month or so ago. We talked about the strategy of bulk sampling and where we're heading with that. We are going to seek approvals for that and look at processing, probably ore sorting as a means to undertake that. So that's well within the scope of work this year. We do have native title negotiations going on. Nelema just hired a new CEO, so that's reinvigorated the process there.
Mm-hmm.
We have lots going this year. We have a great team in place to do all the work. Rob and his team down in Perth, they're absolutely fantastic. You can't give them enough credit for all the hard work they've done.
Getting back to Egina, can you give our listeners an idea about the timing? I mean, what do you expect to accomplish this year? Or hope at least to accomplish this year at Egina?
I would say by the end of this year, we would like to see enough data to tell us whether we can put a resource to this thing, whether the continuity and the grade are there. We're going to do a test area within the mining lease, and then we'll start stepping out from there. So I would say by this end of this year, we'll have a picture of whether this is an expansive deposit or not. We'll also have some elements of permitting as well as Aboriginal negotiations completed by that time as well.
Okay, excellent. Real quickly, Quentin, with just about a minute left here, you're also involved with another company that I follow, Irving Resources. It's a very exciting story in Japan. Could you spend 30 seconds to a minute to tell our listeners about that?
Yeah, you know what, Jay? It is an amazing discovery. We're drilling the first target, Omu Center, at the Omu property in northern Hokkaido. Omu Center was probably the most conceptual or early stage target of all three that we have on the property, and we hit a high grade. Second hole assays, 118.5 gram per ton over 0.32 meter. If you look at it in context of other discoveries in Japan, the initial discovery at Hishikari was 0.15 meter at 290 gram per ton. We are on to something. I don't know what it is yet, but I hope it's big. I hope it's high grade. That's our main focus at Irving. It's an absolute pleasure to work with Akiko Levinson. I'm technical advisor. He was, of course, the president and CEO. We have Newmont in as a new shareholder. They are helping with certain technical aspects, particularly with the geophysical work at the moment, as well as a few other, you know, very detailed technical things. But that focus is giving us the ability to now target, you know, almost like a laser surgeon, these high-grade veins. So I would expect over the next few months to see a continual stream of news and hopefully out of Irving.
All right. Is Sumitomo involved at all with you there in that project?
Sumitomo is fully aware of this project. They do not have an interest in the project. You know, that said, they do have a close relationship with Newmont. So, I would leave it at that. You never know.
Okay. Very good. A lot of exciting things happening, Quentin. What's the next thing we can look for from Novo then? What's the next driver that might get people excited about your story?
That's where I wanted to take this. Right now, we are bulk sampling. We've got several samples out of the ground. We've got everything refurbed. The camp's completely ready. New 20-man camp. We're in it for the long haul. We've got the processing mill set up. They are doing a bit of work on that in preparation for starting processing around early July. But the bulk sampling is underway, and we are going to have results, a very steady stream of results over the next few months out of Egina.
And starting about when? End of the summer?
No, the results we can actually announce fairly quickly because the processing is real time. We anticipate being able to start presenting the gold and whatnot we recovered. Look back to the news release late last year and you'll see how we did it then. We'll do something similar with news releases going forward.
All right. Thank you very much, Quentin. We'll have to leave it go at that. Out of time. Thank you so much for spending the time with us and giving us an update on this very exciting story. Actually, two exciting stories, but we're focusing on Novo right now. Thank you so much, and we'll hope to have you back again sometime soon.
Thank you, Jake.
All right, folks, we have to go to a commercial break. Don't go away, because Ronald Storfeli, who is a co-author of In Gold We Trust, will be with us to talk about this year's study. Some very important things that he's going to tell us, so don't go away. We'll be right back with Ronald Storfeli.
Auron Resources is a copper gold exploration company pursuing the world's next major discoveries. It has seven projects, including two active flagships, Committee Bay in northern Canada and Sombrero in southern Peru. This summer will be one of the most exciting times in Auron's history as the company turns the drill at Sombrero for the first time ever. The project's impressive surface results have identified Sombrero as an analog to one of Peru's biggest mines. Auron is also implementing cutting-edge machine learning technology to unlock its highly prospective gold belt at Committee Bay. Visit AuronResources.com and subscribe to keep up with the company's busy year ahead.
The Voice America Live Events Channel is here now to showcase your corporate, individual, or organization's live event. Visit voiceamerica.com/live events to see all of our past live events and find out more. Whether it's a multi-day conference, special speaker, or single-day event, we've got everything to make your event a success. We can do a few hours or a few days. For more information about taking your event to the next level, call Jeff Spinard at 480-294-6417 or email info@voiceamerica.com. Again, that's Jeff Spinard at 480-294-6417 or send us an email to info@voiceamerica.com. Voice America is where you are and where you want to be. Join us around the globe as we broadcast live from some of the most interesting events available. Don't forget to view all our live events, including on-demand access to past events that you may have missed by visiting voiceamerica.com/live events.
Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business.
You're listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. If you have a question or comment about today's show, Jay would love to hear from you at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also send an email to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. That's questions, the number 4, Taylor@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to Turning Hard Times to Good Times. I'm your host, Jay Taylor, and I'm really pleased to have with me once again Ronald Stofferle. Ronald is a chartered market technician. He was on with us last year, actually, to discuss In Gold We Trust, which he has co-authored with Mark Valick. But Ronald's background in the financial markets for some time, but he is perhaps, I think he is best known for his 6 benchmark reports called In Gold We Trust. It has drawn international coverage and on CNBC, Bloomberg, and Wall Street Journal, The Economist, and The Financial Times, very prestigious publications, of course. So, Ronald, thank you so much for joining us again.
Thank you very much, Jay. I'm sorry, but I have to correct you, but it's also already the 13th edition of The In Gold We Trust.
I'm writing it for
quite a while now. And actually, we hit at a new all-time high, at least in terms of the length of the report.
Oh, okay. Well, we'll have to update our bio here, won't we? That is a bit embarrassing to realize you were doing it for that long. I think in more recent years is when you started really getting a lot of coverage. Since gold really hit its highs in 2011. Well, yeah. We're very short on time, and I went over your book, I said, goodness, we probably should have you on a number of times because almost every chapter in this book is, would be the content for a 25-minute segment. So I want to ask you to start out, though, by asking you to tell our listeners how they can get a copy of it. Now, this is corporate-supported, and one of our sponsors, Novo Resources, I note, is one of your sponsors. So this is free of charge, and people can actually download it, I guess, can't they? And where do they go to do that?
Yes, the report is available totally for free in a compact version, which is still 110 pages. And then there is also the extended version, which is 340 pages. Mm-hmm. So it is quite an extensive read, but there are just so many interesting things to cover these days that we thought, okay, we have to write such a massive report again. It is available for free. Just Google In Gold We Trust 2019 on our webpage. It's free to download it, ingoldwetrust.li, which stands for Liechtenstein. Mm-hmm. And there you can also subscribe for all of our other publications. The report, we've got, as it's a massive investment on our side, there are 15 people involved with crunching the numbers, with proofreading, editing, getting all the data. So we've really got the cream of the crop in the gold mining space and in the gold space in general that support us, because we said, we really want to get the word out, also make a positive case for gold, how gold fits in your portfolio, not only for people, I would say, in our camp, but also for the generalists. So we write quite extensively about the portfolio characteristics of gold, for example, how gold performs in different stages of a recession. So, just invite all your listeners to study the 2019 edition. I think it's really worth the time.
Well, there's so much there, and it really deals with geopolitical aspects of gold. Let's get into some of the topics, and we'll do the best we can. First of all, I noticed that you start out your 2019 annual report on gold with the observation that trust of all kinds of institutions is not what it used to be. Whether it's the news media, churches, big business, governments, central banks, what have you, there is a decline in trust. So talk to our listeners about why that is so important if you're going to have a coherent, thriving society.
Yeah, I mean, I think trust is often underestimated. Yeah, we all take it for granted, but all human interactions are based on trust. Whether it's with your partner, with your business partner, whether you jump a plane, you trust the pilot that he's doing a good job, and you trust the airline company that they've been servicing the plane. So trust is really essential in every part of our life, and it seems that this trust is crumbling at the moment in media, in politics, in society in general. We are seeing that people are questioning beliefs. They are questioning democracy itself. We're quoting quite a lot of studies saying that actually the millennials, they don't care about democracy anymore. They want to have a strong leader, either on the very right or on the very left side of the spectrum. It is no coincidence that populists win elections all over the globe. So I think this crumbling trust is unfortunately a secular trend that we're in the middle of, and where there's still quite a lot of trust is central banking, is the US economy, and is the US dollar. But the interesting thing about trust is it's highly asymmetrical. So it takes years, decades, sometimes centuries to build up that trust, but that trust is broken and lost very, very quickly, sometimes just in a moment. So from my point of view, at some point, the markets will find out the emperor has no clothes. They will lose trust in the US dollar, in the Federal Reserve, and I think that gold should be a pretty good safe haven in that environment.
Well, we certainly aren't cheering for that loss of trust, just so we can have, so we can gain wealth by owning gold. As a matter of fact, I think we want to own gold as a safety precaution against those kind of events that you're talking about. But to what extent, Peter, do you think that this lack of trust is playing into the hoarding of gold by central banks? You notice you talk a lot and provide a lot of data and evidence that China, Russia, central banks, especially those that are adversarial, central banks of adversarial countries to the United States, seem to be building up their gold reserves. Is this a repercussion of a lack of trust geopolitically, would you say?
Yeah. I think it's clearly a sign of the de-dollarization that we're writing about for quite some years now. Last year, we have seen that central banks bought 657 tons of gold, which is the highest amount of purchases since 1971. It is not only Russia, China, India, Kazakhstan, Turkey. It is also some European Union countries like Poland or Hungary. Just a fantastic quote by the Hungarian Central Bank about its first gold purchases. They say, in normal circumstances, gold has a confidence-building feature. It may play a stabilizing role and act as a major line of defense under extreme market conditions. In addition, gold continues to be one of the safest assets, which can be related to individual properties such as the limited supply of physical precious metals, which is not linked with credit or counterparty risk. And I mean, that's the Hungarian Central Bank is saying that. It seems that they are readers of the Ingoldby Trust Report, but it clearly shows that on an international level, I think there's also this loss of trust that we're seeing, and this repatriation trend that is picking up. So Germany, Holland, but also Austria repatriating the gold holdings, bringing the gold back home. That's a clear evidence of this loss of trust.
For sure. So a lot of the European central banks are adding gold, physical gold, if either. Either going out and acquiring more gold, or they're having their gold repatriated, which is, as you suggest, is certainly suggesting a lack of trust. Well, China is doing a lot of other things too, besides importing gold. They're certainly setting up the One Belt One Road structure, which is just a huge infrastructure that they're building up that allows trade for a number of countries, and I think the United States. Is one of the few countries that is really trying to stay away from that kind of from hooking up with China in its One Belt One Road. Like Canada is involved or potentially involved. Yeah. Australia, of course, down in that part of the world. But do you see this is also Russia is very much a part of that. Russia can provide the raw materials. China, of course, with its population, has a demand for those raw materials. What do you make of all the things that are going on, alternative ways to trade and move money around, of course, maybe Bitcoin or some of those cryptocurrencies come into play somewhere down the road?
Well, when it comes to China, we dedicated quite a large chapter about China and especially the Chinese gold market in this year's report, because for the very first time, we're also publishing the report not only in German and in English, but also in Mandarin. So, yeah, this is quite a big step for us, because China is at the moment the biggest producer, but also the largest consumer of gold. And I think that, you know, the whole de-dollarization topic, I think that many commentators are a bit naive and think, you know, the renminbi will replace the US dollar as the world reserve currency very soon. I think that's, you know, Rick Rule once said, the US dollar is a lie, but it's a very, very liquid lie. And, you know, just the dimensions of trade and settlements in the US dollar compared to the renminbi, and the depth of the capital markets and the sophistication of capital markets, it clearly shows me that that's still a long time in the future that we'll really see a competition from the renminbi to the US dollar. However, we are seeing so many small steps that actually the Chinese want to diversify out of the dollar. They're building up gold reserves. They're not investing into US treasuries anymore. On the other hand, they are very active when it comes to gold. As I've said, they became the by far the largest producer a couple of years ago, and they will continue to be the largest producer. They are building their infrastructure for gold trading, but also for the oil trade. Just to give you one number, Jay, the Chinese introduced the Shanghai Oil Future only last year in spring. And now they already got 12% market share in the oil market, which is by far the biggest commodity market. So that's an enormous success. And you know, I think that the whole trade war that is going on, when I'm talking to Chinese colleagues, and I'm quite often in China nowadays, it seems that they're pretty relaxed about it. They know that Donald Trump wants to win an election in 2020, and they know that they don't have to care about any elections. So they, I think they are really playing the long game, very strategic thinkers, and I think the One Belt, One Road, there's this Chinese proverb, one generation builds the road on which the next one drives, and I think this perfectly describes this long-term thinking of the Chinese. And you know, the Belt and Road Initiative, it encompasses 68 countries and regions, which are home to around half the global population. And it currently generates around one third of global GDP. So it is a huge infrastructure project. I think there's lots of moving parts. But from my point of view, gold plays a role in that in that One Belt, One Road. We for example, we're showing the gold reserves of the central banks and especially the gold deposits of all the participants of the Belt and Road Initiative, and it's massive. So I think this is definitely something to watch. And of course, the Chinese, you know, trade is one of the most important peacemakers or peacekeepers, probably. So I think it's also to increase the cooperation between China and those other countries.
Mm-hmm. Indeed, and it seems as though the United States isn't too keen on having that happen. They want to control the sea lanes, you know, the South China Sea and so forth. But let me ask you, Peter. So the Shanghai oil exchanges capture 12% of the market, you said, of the oil market. If they can continue to grow that oil market like that, might that not underpin their own currency?
Yes and no. I think that you know, many many commentators making the case for significantly lower renminbi, and actually many people think that it will rise significantly. I think where we're standing at the moment is just the level that the Chinese wants to see. I think the devaluation that we have seen over the last couple of weeks, this is definitely something that they try to scare Donald Trump. But everybody who thinks that actually they want to be the trade and the reserve currency with some sort of a gold-backed renminbi, I think this is a bit naive, because I think a strong renminbi is the very least that they want. Because at the moment we are seeing definitely a weaker Chinese economy. Essentially, we're seeing a global slowdown in 95% of all countries. Economic numbers are coming in weaker than 1 year ago. But, and this is important, the Chinese started this monetary U-turn already in fall. So they lowered the reserve requirements, they put in massive fiscal stimulus. And so I think the bottom in commodity markets and also in the gold market is also kind of influenced by this Chinese U-turn. So actually they were the first ones, and now we're seeing this massive U-turn by the Federal Reserve with lowering rates two or three times this year, with ending or finishing quantitative tightening much, much earlier. And I think sooner or later we will see new rounds of quantitative easing, perhaps at some point even negative rates, MMT, you name it.
Mm-hmm. Well, it sure seems like that's what's heading our way for sure. You have a couple chapters devoted to Bitcoin. On pages 242 through 254, you address gold versus Bitcoin and ask the question whether the two linked together might be stronger. Could you share some of your thoughts on that topic?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we are following Bitcoin and the crypto scene for many years already. So already 4 years ago, we wrote the first time about Bitcoin. And I think there are many, many similarities between gold and Bitcoin. And actually, Bitcoin was kind of designed as a digital gold, because there's, you know, the stock to flow ratio is very similar. So you've got a natural built-in low inflation. I think it's no coincidence that you're mining for Bitcoin, that the logo of Bitcoin is actually a gold coin. And from my point of view, you know, we have seen this crypto winter, but now Bitcoin is up at 9,000 again, but it's still no big topic. And actually, my thesis is that the cycles in Bitcoin are so much shorter, so those boom and bust cycles, because there is almost no debt involved. And normally in a normal financial market crisis and bull and bear market, there's much more debt involved, and this debt has to be restructured or written off and so on. So those bear market phases take longer. But with Bitcoin, we have seen it has been a very brief and brutal bear market, and now we're up again. So from my point of view, Bitcoin makes sense from a portfolio point of view. There's a very, very little correlation between gold and Bitcoin. We're actually doing a fund now where we are doing a rebalancing strategy between gold and Bitcoin. And yeah, we're pretty positive when it comes to competing currencies. You know, competition makes every market better. So why shouldn't it make currency markets better?
Well, this is something I'd certainly like to talk to you about more, but my engineer is telling us we have less than 3 minutes left. So let me just ask you, since we cover gold stocks, I write about them and research them. You said in one of your chapters, anyway, on page 263, you raised the question, after the creative destruction, a bull market, what are your thoughts about the gold share markets now, and do you think they could be poised for something more positive on the upside in the years to come?
Yeah, I'm super excited about the outlook for the mining stocks. I think we've seen massive creative destruction in the sector. I think that the companies really, they most of them did a tremendous job just cleaning their balance sheets, getting leaner. And we've seen the recent M&A wave clearly reinforces our positive assessment. And actually, I think at the moment we're seeing the highest leverage on rising gold prices ever. So if gold goes to 1450, 1500, and this can happen definitely this year, I think we will see a great run in the mining stocks. And actually, Jay, nobody from the generalists at the moment is invested in gold, and especially not in mining stocks. And just the last thing that I want to say, we're talking to lots of wealth managers, institutional players, and so on. Fourth quarter 2018 was a big warning shot. So basically every asset class was down, but gold was up 7% and mining stocks were up 14%. So gold reappeared on the watch list of many, many really investors with deep pockets. And I think as soon as we're above this resistance zone, I think there's going to be lots of momentum kicking in.
All right. We'll have to leave it at that. That's certainly in concert with what Michael Oliver told us in the first segment of today's show as well. We can get through that 1360, 1350, 1360 level. We could see a very rapid rise from there. Peter, I want to thank you so much for spending your time with us. Lots of things to talk to you about. I want to get your opinion on a lot of other topics if we can have you back sometime in the near future.
Anytime. Thank you very much, Jay.
All right. Thank you. Thank you so much, Peter. All right, folks. Well, next week with John Rubino will be our main guest, Michael Oliver as well. And I do expect to have a surprise guest too. So until next week, next Tuesday, in fact, goodbye and God's blessings to you.
Thank you again for listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with Jay Taylor. Please join us again next Tuesday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel.